this point in time. We'd like to call to order the Napomo Community Services District meeting for December 14th, 2005. And I want to welcome you all here, wish you all happy season here, and please join me in the flag salute. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please?
Director Hussein?
Here.
Director Trotter?
Here.
Director Wynn?
Here.
Director Eby?
Here.
President Mihaly?
Here. At this time, we'd like to open it to public comment for any item that is not on the agenda but within the district's purview, and I would like to start with Commander Basti of our Sheriff's Department. Good morning.
Thank you, President, members of the board, staff, and members of the public. And true, I'm not on the agenda. I don't know how I did that, but thank you for allowing just a couple minutes. Couple of things. As we get into the holiday season, we're still doing our Avoid the 13. So we've been very fortunate so far. These next 2 weeks are very high number of parties and folks going to and from. And of course, those things, we're out in double enforcement, making sure everybody gets home safe. Couple things, we're gearing up for the break from school as the kids are out, to make sure that, because in years past we've had problems with after the New Year's, they have the week past that, and we seem to have a few car burglaries and a few mischief and things, so we'll be diligently doing those. A couple of resolved issues. The mayor's place was broken into. We ended up catching a suspect. We got the property back. There was also another burglary over at the rental center, and we got those folks, and we got their property back too. So, been successful on those. Those are only two big items. Thirdly, I told you a month ago we were authorized to get the spike strips. We've had an occasion to use them twice. Once on Thompson Road, right there by the high school. It slowed the pursuit down. It did go into Santa Maria, but it knocked the speed from 100 miles an hour down to about 40 until the tire finally came apart, and was a big safety issue. Again, early yesterday morning at midnight, Santa Maria was chasing the homicide suspect from their homicide on Sunday, the shooting, and they chased him around Santa Maria for about 40 minutes, came up Guadalupe Road. At Osa Flacco, we spike stripped, and within a quarter mile, the car went into the ditch with both left side tires taken out. So it resolved that issue safely as well. So for our $57 investment, they replaced free by the company, significant safety issue. So it was one of those things that we finally got in all the cars. And for $57 a unit, you just the safety issue is just incredible. With that, just from my staff and from me, I wish you all a happy holidays and a great New Year's. We will have extra staff out on New Year's because it is a weekend. Usually if it's on a weekday, most people have to go back to work. But being on a Saturday, we anticipate not a whole lot of problems, but just a lot of folks out and about. So any questions or any unresolved issues that the board or the community has?
Any questions from the board, public? Any questions?
Yeah, and we'll see you next year. And as always, Mike's been real good about calling us and either getting advice or giving us a heads up. So we certainly appreciate your general manager's assistance to us. And it helps our efforts in keeping this community safe. So we appreciate it. We look forward to 06 being a great year as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Commander Basti. Okay, any other comments from the general public? Seeing none, then we'll bring it back, and we have the consent agenda. Anybody want an item pulled? Questions for clarification?
I'd like item D5 pulled for discussion. I don't have any difficulty with it, but I do think we need to get it into the daylight so we can thoroughly understand it.
thoughts exactly. Yeah, I did want to have D5 pulled for board discussion.
I have a couple of questions.
Yes, please, Mrs. Marcy.
On D3, Vista Robles, that's on Misty Glen Place. Could you please tell me what that is?
This is the Bellagio track that Mr. Nestor's finished.
Okay.
So that's the last addition, 19 homes, I believe, into Black Lake.
Okay, and then that sewer is connected with Black Lake?
With Black Lake, yes.
Okay. And then I see this is on, whereas on April 28th, the owner offered the water and sewer improvements to the Napomo Community Services
right.
District.
Often, the question is, how come in April, and why are we waited until December? And often a builder will make the offer early because they know they've got a list of 8 things they need to do, and they say, "Well, I can make that offer right now." We don't accept until our field foreman has given a final sign off on the inspection for the entire track. So that just occurred, and that's why we have that in front of us today.
And I have,
please,
on D1 on the warrants.
Mm-hmm.
Just have a couple of curious questions.
Sure.
The California Rural Water, those are membership dues.
The annual membership dues for a number of the organizations that we're members of, California Rural Water, California Special Districts Association.
Okay.
So the California Rural Water always confuses me also, because
okay.
Dan talks about the
yeah.
Dan uses rural water quite often, but not Chuck Baker's Rural Water.
Yes, that's what got
water
me,
company,
I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess the floating aerators are
right.
those.
What we have there is, in fact, this question came up by another director before the meeting. This is an ongoing project we have at all of our wastewater lagoons, which previously had been aerated from a bottom aeration system, had led us to a number of odor problems back at the Southland plant. And what we're doing is we're moving to really a more typical industry standard of surface aeration. So. That's surface aeration.
I think we saw some
yes. and it is working much better. The BODs are
the BODs better. The odors are down, and the dissolved oxygen
yeah.
levels are up. So.
So.
Okay. Let's see. There was. I just have another curious question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you buy all of your gasoline at Napomo Shell?
We do. for our district vehicles.
So
we have an account there.
Okay.
Yeah, boy, that's the price of fuel is really reflected. Yeah, they do a lot of driving.
And we have seen fuel come down, of course, quite a bit, and we'll be watching as we go forward to make sure that the fuel surcharges that we saw during the summer by a number of our providers, service providers, if you will,
is this a negotiated price, or is it the posted price you pay there?
At the show, maybe the posted price.
Okay, that was all, okay. Except for D5, I'm interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Trotter? Mr. Wynn, anything? Okay. Then would like to open it to public comment for any comments on our consent agenda. Seeing none, bring it back to the board, and we need a motion to accept items D1 through D4.
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn.
Second.
Second by Mr. Hebe. Madam Secretary.
Director Wynn.
Yes.
Director Eby.
Yes.
Director Worsley.
Yes.
Director Trotter.
Yes.
President Verhaeghe.
Yes. D5, the health benefit. Mr. LeBrun, I'm sorry.
That's right. Thank you, President Verhaeghe. The item that's before you today makes a change to the district's health care package, but only in a very specific manner, and that is to include vesting. Currently, the district's health care benefit is it does not require vesting, and the way this came to light is as we are considering the appointment or the hiring of two employees, one of those a seasoned PERS member, it became evident that if a person hired on with us and met the conditions for retirement under PERS, which is the age 50 and at least 10 years of a service to a PERS agency, that person could hire on at Napomo, work for as little as a year, and retire, and it would be at their option to take our health care benefit into retirement. And our health care benefit is the directors, I think, have seen, is a very generous benefit, and it is something that should require a higher level of service to the district than a year or something like that. So what we've done here, what staff has done, is really take an approach to contacting PERS and saying, how do we include vesting? They said, well, we have a very standard vesting policy. In fact, the resolution that's attached is a PERS standard resolution. And in order to stay on track with some of our plans for hiring and staffing, staff thought it best to bring this forward in itself and just the vesting policy. And the way this works is if we forward it to PERS by the 10th of any month, it becomes effective on the 1st of the following month. So what the intention here and the timeline here is to adopt this resolution as proposed. It would implement then a vesting requirement, which says that an employee would have to basically work 20 years of PERS service in order to receive the district's medical benefit and retirement. Of those 20 years, 15 of them would have to be with the district. And then that vesting policy would be effective as of February 1, 2006. That's why I've brought to you simply the vesting aspect, addressing just the vesting aspect of our current benefit package, as opposed to opening up the benefit package and going through an analysis of the entire package, because I felt like that might take a meeting or two, take some more analysis. I wouldn't have been able to bring it to the board this quickly. We've gone with a standard revision that PERS has in place in order to meet a time constraint and be able to hire employees by February 1 of next year. Because my thought is, again, with our two pending positions, that we will not hire until this change is in place. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions along these.
Questions, comments for Mr. LeBrun?
Well, not. I have a question.
Please.
I'm aware of one position, but I wasn't aware of two positions.
We are considering a limited term assistant to the manager position, mm-hmm. and we also have a conservation position. Resource Conservation Compliance Specialist, which we are currently interviewing.
Right.
We're in the middle of interviews. So those two positions.
Okay. So how would, say, these people have already previously worked for, into the PERS,
mm-hmm.
So this would just be a certain percentage that would add to their retirement?
No, it's actually specific to the health care benefit of the retirement. The PERS retirement package, as far as what that monthly check looks like, that already includes, like, say we hired on, for instance, an employee who had had 28 years with a PERS agency. We hired that employee on, and they completed two more years with us, then retired. Their retirement benefit, the monthly check, the district's only responsible for, if you will, the prorated share, a fraction of. But under our current health care benefit, since it does not require vesting, That person could opt to take 100%, take our health care benefit, which we would be 100% responsible for. And we did some computations here, and with that scenario of a person who then in their mid-60s retired from the district, that could result in literally $250,000 liability to the district, as that person had that person and their spouse had that health care benefit through the remainder of their life.
Yeah, I wish I had that. Maybe I can hire on for a year after.
As has been stated, it's a very generous benefit, and we're not changing the benefit, but we are changing the ability. Again, now, to go to the same scenario, that person who had 28 years of service with some other PERS agencies, if they came to us, it would take them 5 years of service with us to get to a 50% level, and then an additional 10 years of service with this district to get to the 100%, the full benefit, which is now offered without vesting.
And just one more question. Would this excuse me? Would this apply to all new hires or just these two positions?
It will apply to all staff the district hires after it becomes effective, which again we're on track here to have this effective as of February 1, 2006, if we adopt it.
Mark?
Yes.
You might take an extra step. What's happening right now is a little bit unusual because these individuals have a history with PERS. Customarily, a new hire wouldn't. Isn't that important?
I just might comment on that just because I have some experience in this. Generally, what you see is, especially like in our wastewater and our water system, a lot of times we want to attract people with experience. And typically that experience is from another local agency that operates a water or a sewer system. And typically that, you know, whatever agency they come from has a PERS program. So to me, when I've watched districts hire throughout the years, it's not unusual for them to want to attract experienced professionals in these specific areas that have experience, and so I think it will, in the long run, protect the district's coffers, so to speak, because it now allows us to, when we hire experienced employees from other agencies, you know, I think even our current utilities manager came from another public agency with a PERS, and so it kind of works this way, and this. To me, this resolution ensures that when we use that practice, which I think is a good practice, that we're not charging our customer base for a long-term healthcare benefits unless that person works here for a period of years and contributes to the district in such a way that everybody feels comfortable with 100% healthcare at the end of their retirement. So what you make is a good question. If we hire brand new people that just have their certificate and have never worked for a place, I think your observation is absolutely correct. But as a practical matter, I don't think many agencies go through that process.
Mr. Eby, you can answer. Yeah, would you please repeat one more time when this becomes effective for a new hire?
It will become effective for every, it becomes effective the month following the month before the resolution to the PERS agency, as long as before that resolution, before the 10th of the month. So if we are successful today, we'll sign before the PERS. We didn't do that before the 10th of December, so it falls to, we've done it before the 10th of January, and then by just their standards, even if they don't act on the paperwork, if PERS is all bottled up or they close their offices in January, that's fine. We send it to them before the 10th of January. It is effective to all employees that we hire from after the 1st of February. So that's how they affect.
On or after?
We'll check on or after. I see Lisa's head going up and down, but I mean, if we had to, we'd
January 2nd.
Well, we will make, this all points to make sure it's applicable.
Yeah, we would take the very conservative approach.
Call CYA.
Right.
It would be curious if we took all these precautions and missed it by a day.
You're right. Mr. Nguyen, do you have any questions or comments?
I sort of feel this is equitable, having worked for a company for 31 and a half years, and, well, a little more than that. I certainly paid a portion of my medical upon retiring, about 30%. And, basically it's about $1,000 a month hit. So if we're paying it fully, we certainly want an employee that has spent some time here and contributed to the district and the community, not just a 1 or 2 year and then I'm out of here. And yes, I opt to take that full medical, because it's only going to increase as time goes by. I think over 20 years, the $250,000 may be a little on the short side, the way medical costs are going at this point. But that's my opinion of it. So I think this is very equitable. So with that,
I can just comment briefly that I'm on PERS as a result of being hired at Cal Poly, PERS Choice. And I pay $93 a month, and the university pays over $1,000. Mm-hmm. And it's for me and my entire family. And it covers all the bells and whistles. And that's pretty standard. And I've been there, this is my fifth year.
So. Okay, well, then we'll open it to the public for comment on this item. Seeing none, we'll bring it back. I'd like a motion to approve in a second.
I move.
Mr. Nguyen, motion. A second on this. Mr. Trotter, second. Madam Secretary.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Worsley?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
President O'Malley?
Yes. Okay. Moving on to administrative items. E1. Can you believe it? It's the end of the year. We get to elect.
President Berhane, if I may, Mr. Seitz has asked to take this opportunity to update the board on some of the recent changes with regarding the board of directors and public boards. So that's what he's handing out here to you, and then he said we could hold him to 10 minutes, so.
Yeah, okay. As you,
thank you, Mr. Seitz.
As these agenda items come up, my plan is to take those sections out of the new law and just go over them briefly with the board, how they've changed, and what this is the section on the board of directors. This law becomes effective January 1st. So, but it does have some application to today's proceedings, and I thought that I'd just briefly go over it. When we come to different items that come up on the agenda, I will, you know, brief the board on that rather than trying to go through 40 pages of new legislation in one whack, which will probably confuse everybody. This is AB 1234 out of that will become effective. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to go over the various code sections on the board of directors and committees, because that's one of the things that you will be looking at today. The California legislature completely rewrote community service district law. So if you have an old section of the 6000 section of your code or your California government code, throw it away, because it won't do you any good anymore. It's completely rewritten from section one to section last. So although a lot of it is duplicative, a lot of it has changed too. So this is on the board of directors. 61040A says the legislative body shall have 5 members known as the Board of Directors. Under the old law, it could be 3 or 5. Now it's 5. The Board of Directors shall establish policies for the operation of the district. The Board of Directors shall provide for the implementation of those policies, which is the responsibility of the district manager. This new legislation clearly, and there's more to it than just what's here, but the legislature felt that there was a lot of ambiguity in the old law between the roles of directors and managers, and they spent a considerable amount of time addressing that issue and the distinction between the board and the general manager. I want to go down to C. You can, these are just ones I wanted to highlight. If it's not highlighted, it's pretty much what was in the old law.
Under B, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Voter means person registered to vote or yeah. Person who's registered and does vote?
No, registered voter.
Yeah, I made the same observation. It's a little ambiguous in that regard.
Yeah, but a voter is defined as being, you have to be qualified to vote, and of course, in a general election, you don't know if they voted or not. Yeah. That's why we have the secret ballot, so. Would
you repeat that?
It says, no person shall be a candidate for board of directors unless she is a voter of the district or the proposed district. And what I'm saying is that is typically defined as a registered voter rather than a person that actually votes.
Okay. Yeah. Why, you got to put that word in there.
When I saw that, because the old law was clearer. It said mm-hmm. registered voter.
It said yeah. registered.
But, you know, again, the California legislature didn't call me up and say, John, what do you think about this? So it is what's there. And I do suspect that there will be some cleanup legislation as these various community service districts really scrutinize this. C is pretty much the old law, but it really makes it clear. It says, all members of the board of directors shall exercise their independent judgment on behalf of the interests of the entire district, including the residents, property owners, and the public as a whole. This makes it clear, hopefully, that the board would recognize the distinctions between property owners and residents. And this would basically come up in the issues of assessment districts and because those are typically property owner financing mechanisms as opposed to residents, which are ratepayers. Now, they can obviously be one and the same, but it does recognize the distinction. The board will have the opportunity, if it wants to do so, is members of the board can be elected by division. You can actually set this district up the same way the Board of Supervisors sets up their organization. You know, they're elected by districts.
You mean we can get to gerrymander?
You can get to that if you want. And there's a lot of pros and cons about doing that, but the new law makes it clear that you can form voter districts. And obviously this board would have some control as to the district boundaries, and you can be elected from districts. Now there's more law on this within this new law. This is just one little section, but there's a whole procedure in another part for accomplishing that. This will be of interest to Ed. D on the next page. There's this old issue of incompatible office. Says service on a municipal advisory council established pursuant to section 31010 or an area planning commission established pursuant to section 65101 should not be considered an incompatible office. I've often given advice that board members that serve on advisory councils of the board by the Board of Supervisors could find themselves as a challenge as an incompatible office because you're mixing land use with obligations to serve that new land use designation. John, this makes it clear that that is not no longer, that is no longer a compatible office.
I would assume that that means the same, but advisory committees are not municipal advisory councils. Those are
exactly.
Two different statutes.
Yeah, but
yeah,
actually, yeah, when you think about it, though.
But it would seem that this one actually has more authority than an advisory committee.
Exactly.
So if is this good? Is exempt, certainly the other should yeah. be.
Yeah, if you're on an area planning commission, you know, those decisions are valid unless appealed to the Board of Supervisors.
That's
so
right.
It seems to me, I would have no problems arguing. I have no doubt that a court yeah. would find
it's
that being on an advisory council is an incompatible office, but being on a planning commission isn't. So I think
yeah.
There's a safe harbor here for the advisory committee. Again, a lot of this is 61042. It's 4 years until the successor qualifies for office. Directors take office on the first Friday in December following their election. C, going down there, vacancies in the office of members of elected board shall be filled pursuant to 1780. That's always been the practice of this district, so that's not anything new for us. 61043 is why I wanted to go through this, because that's what we're here to do today in this next agenda item. Typically, it's what this does is gives you the specific authority and guidance under 61043 in parens A. The last sentence, a board of directors may elect the officers of the board of directors annually. B is the officers of the board of directors are the president and the vice president. The president shall preside over the meetings of the board of directors, and the vice president shall serve in the president's absence or inability to serve. Now the next one is critical, key. Board of directors may create additional officers and elect members of those offices, provided that no member of a board of directors shall hold more than one office. So I suspect, I don't know how that would apply, but you are no longer just bound to a president and a vice president. If somebody can think of another office, just sort of remember you can only hold one of the offices on the board of directors.
You could be master at arms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. I don't know. But it's there and it's now available. 61044, which is on the bottom of page 19, is something we already knew, that we're governed by the Brown Act, our meetings. B is new. Oh, sorry, 61045B. The Board of Directors shall act only by ordinance, resolution, or motion. That's always been the law. But D is new. And what it says is the minutes of the Board of Directors shall record the ayes and no votes taken by the members of the Board of Directors for the passages of all ordinances, mm-hmm. resolutions, or motions. Now, the old community service district law said unless there was a unanimous vote on motions, that's when you had to take the roll call. But I think there's always been this confusion about silence and a lot of other things, and so they are now, it's a roll call vote on all actions taken by the board. Now this board has traditionally done that, so it's not going to be a new thing. I think there have been some circumstances where we've taken voice votes without roll call, but from here forward, it's going to be my advice to all my boards, community service district boards, that all actions taken are taken by roll call vote.
Well, I think we have not done that many times.
We probably have.
We'll have a general discussion, and then we say, staff would say, well, we think we understand clearly where you want us to go
right.
next.
Well, that's a good point.
And we were off and running.
Right. I think,
we have done some of those all
yeah.
in favor.
But they're not, you're right. You're going up to B. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it in that direction. F, The Board of Directors shall adopt rules or bylaws for its proceedings. We historically have done that. We're probably going to have to tinker with them a little bit, but just be aware that our bylaws provide that changes in the law supersede our bylaws. So we don't need to rush in here and change our bylaws to make them perfect, because this, our own bylaws provide that they're subject to different codes and regulations adopted that we're subject to. Again.
John, on D, before we leave it, Director Wiersing has often asked that her vote be recorded personally, that she wanted it to specify that she had voted one way or the other.
Right.
And all we have done in the past was to record the vote. We would say 5-0, 4-1, whatever. But does this mean that names must be identified? Now, will you say aye, and then you list the names, you say no, and you list the names?
Yeah, what will happen, Donna will say, you know, usually it goes to maker of the motion, the second, and then the president votes last. I mean, that's traditionally how we've set it up. It just means that every vote will be a roll call vote.
But we have not recorded those in the past.
Well, I think what you're saying is we haven't tied a name to the
vote. Okay. And I think that we would have to do that from here on in.
Okay.
But so it could just say, in my mind, if it's a unanimous vote, all directors voting aye could be reflected in the minutes. If it's not that way, then there would be an actual, our minutes would reflect who voted yes and who voted no.
Or could we alternatively just reflect the minority?
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, if we had 4-1 and we could say, Director Nguyen was
voted.
Well, if every vote said aye with a colon and had the names, no with a colon, and then abstain or absent, I mean, that's the other possibilities.
Yeah, we could toss that around.
Yeah,
we don't have to make a decision.
I'm just curious whether D, how we'd understand D. Is it saying that we record just the numbers, or is it recording that we identify who voted out?
I think it means record who, identification.
Okay.
Well, that would take the conservative approach, and that's probably the best way to do it.
G is the Board of Directors shall adopt policies for the operation of the district, including but not limited to administrative policies, fiscal policies, personnel policies, and purchasing policies required by this division. We do that already, but I just want to point that out, that that's a change in the law. The other one here is I wanted to bring to your attention is compensation. And this has changed a little bit, and we will need to address this. The $100 a day stays. That's the same regulation that it's always been. However, B provides for an alternative, which is basically an increase in pay. It says the Board of Directors by ordinance, so you have to adopt an ordinance to do this. And by the way, the ordinance law has changed back to the two readings. We are now required to follow the county procedures on adopting ordinances, and that is the introduction and then passage. Keep in mind that we have always done that as a policy position, as less than emergencies, but now it's required. So there is a two hearing process for adopting ordinances, but you can increase your compensation if you adopt by ordinances the provisions of the water code. I think we already have this, but the Board of Directors may provide by ordinance or resolution, and we adopt our bylaws by resolution, and we have these sections in there, that a member may receive their actual and necessary travel and incidental expenses occurred while on official business. So I think we have that reimbursement policy. In fact, I think what we do is we adopt our personnel policy on reimbursement, which is for meals and We have a policy on motels and all those things already in place, so we are ahead of this game a little bit. However, compensation changes a little bit. Of course, D is there. You can waive your compensation. Now, a day of service is now a defined term. Now, we defined a day of service, a half day of service, in our bylaws. So our bylaws address this pretty much already, but a day of service means any of the following: a meeting conducted pursuant to the Brown Act. That's automatically a day of service, and that's $100. Now, the next one: representation of the district at a public event, provided the board of directors has previously approved the member's representation at a board of directors meeting, and that member delivers a written report to the board of directors regarding the member's representation at the next board of directors meeting. So, if this is a little different than what we had in our bylaws, but in order to receive the day's compensation for attendance at another meeting or another public agency that you're directed to go to, there has to be a written report presented to the board at the subsequent meeting in order to get that compensation. So,
but it only says a report regarding that member's representation.
Right.
So it's basically, I attended this meeting on item such and such, I spoke to...
Yeah, I don't think this has to be a 10-minute dissertation on everything that happened there. I'm just saying, I think what this is aimed at is accountability.
Yeah.
But not the quality of representation, that's the wrong word, the technicalities of the representation. It's just that there will be now an accounting mechanism in place for a public, I think it's just an accounting issue where they want to make sure there's accountability, so that there'll be a report, and the minutes would reflect it.
Also, it does go on, or it says that this person's representation at whatever this meeting is going to be has to be approved by the board.
Right.
So that's a motion and votes.
Well, right. An example of that, Ed is the alternate for the REC.
Yeah.
And unlike many other alternates, he attends nearly every meeting. And that means that when Michael cannot be there, and on occasion he can, he's really up to speed. He knows what we're talking about. He's been in previous meetings, and he can speak to the issues. That, to me, would be an example of this, except the written report part.
And I would think it would go like this. Now, we have to work on this and probably develop some guidelines to make this work. But I still think that if there was part of our things that directors are authorized to attend meetings, board of supervisors meetings, where the RMS is, things that we have an interest in, you just do it for one motion, I think it carries the full year. I don't think that the district needs to be in a position of saying, well, I'm not authorized to be here. I mean, this is important to individual board members. I think we can handle that by one motion, that saying that the board members are authorized to appear in front of the board of supervisors when these issues are on the board of supervisors' agenda. Yeah. Because a lot of times I could see, as a practical matter, there's not going to be a time to make a bring it to the board, put it on an agenda, and say, okay, you're authorized to go there. I think that there can be a host of things that are on the board of supervisors' agenda. And the RAC is, since we appoint somebody to the RAC, I think it's already covered.
Yeah. Yeah.
The real question that the board is going to have to struggle here is we traditionally said that was a half-day service, $50. So we've always had this kind of distinction in our bylaws. We've broken that $100 out a little more defined, so we may have to think about. Still, the $600 limitation is still at the end of the trail, so this isn't exactly...
Well, my attendance of the RAC would not come into this at all, because I don't represent this board.
Exactly.
Right.
There.
Right.
And that's a whole different...
Appointed by...
Yeah.
Okay.
for supervisor.
Just want to point that out, that there's a little change in there. I think our policies are pretty good on this issue, but are going to require some tinkering. And you can read through these. The other thing that's changed, though, is a participation in training programs that is directly related to the district, provided that the Board of Directors has previously approved a member's participation at a Board of Directors meeting. Now, I think, again, this can be a broad directive. If you want, you can make it narrow. You can say, the board wants to have the policy of directors requesting and the board approving attendance at training meetings, but also, I think, through the budgetary process and our policies, that you're encouraged to go is that direction. But in order to get paid that $100 to do it, if that's what you want to do, you have to have a written report back to the district to attend. District officers, again, it's the same what we have already. This provides that you can have a county treasurer or you can have your own treasurer. We of course, gotten away from the county a long time ago. This just reaffirms what we did in the past is correct. And I didn't bring this. I thought I had this in these sections, but obviously I missed it. But one of the other things is that there's a process for appointing advisory committees. Mm. Again, though, those advisory committees are Brown Act committees. So if you're going to publish formal advisory committees, just sort of remember that those would be Brown Act committees. They would not be considered ad hoc committees.
That's always been the case, though.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. A lot of this stuff is just restating. Did I put it in there?
It's 61048.
Okay, maybe I just didn't highlight it. 61048. Oh, good. I did get it in there.
Right in the middle.
Oh, right. There it is. I just didn't get it bolded. A board of directors may appoint one or more advisory committees to advise the board of directors about the district finances, policies, programs, or operations. Just remember that if it's an advisory committee with broad jurisdictional operations and not specific, it is a regular committee and is subject to the Brown Act, whereas an ad hoc committee is specific to a specific task, they report, and then that committee is dissolved.
But I thought you told us that even though it were an ad hoc committee, that if we appointed a public member to the ad hoc committee, all the strictures of the Brown Act still apply.
Exactly. Exactly. An ad hoc committee is comprised of two members or less of a board.
And that's
it. As soon as you appoint the general manager to it, you appoint the lawyer to it, you appoint a public member to it, it automatically becomes a Brown Act committee. Now, that doesn't mean the general manager and the lawyer can't staff the ad hoc committee.
If they become voting members.
Yeah, or member participation in it, then there's a distinction. Is this gray? Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not sitting here saying there isn't some gray areas here, but when we appoint ad hoc committees, I try to make sure that there is no public member or more than two board members or a staff member that is officially appointed to that ad hoc committee. So I just wanted to bring this up. We do have the president and the vice president that's on our agenda. This covers it a little bit. Also kind of covers a little bit of the responsibilities of the president and the vice president and the relationship between the board and the general manager.
Mm.
Okay.
You didn't say anything about 61050B. County treasurer shall serve as the treasurer of the district?
Right, but if you read through there, there's a provision in there where the general manager can act as a treasurer.
Or we can appoint a district treasurer.
Exactly, and we have done that. Our finance, now, there's going to be a little bit of ambiguity in terms. We've been calling it our financial officer. I think in our bylaws or how we... Do we have a district treasurer designated?
We do in the resolution. We appointed the general manager back to the district treasurer.
Okay, so okay. We have already done that. So I think...
I just thought if we need cleanup language, this is the time to get it.
A lot of things, we have been pretty good about setting up policies and procedures that the California legislature would like community service districts to do on this go around. So we are really ahead of this legislation. I think we're probably 85% compliant with this stuff, and we've always operated in this new legislation just, it's not going to be that difficult for us. We're not going to have to reinvent the wheel and go through a lot of new adoptions to be in compliance. I think one of them is going to be is director compensation for activities outside the district. We're going to have to take a little harder look at.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Seitz. And Mr. LeBrun.
Real quick, the only thing I wanted to bring to the director's attention is our committee assignments for last year. I think we've got them correct here, but just everybody take a good look. If there's any inputs or any committees we missed, let us know. This isn't so much, this is just a reminder, and I think our committee appointments will be handled at the first meeting in January, but just a, if anything's
yeah, it under the standing committee assignments, mm-hmm. We did approve a, quote, parks committee, which was specifically to deal with these two parcels mm-hmm. here at this point in time. And we did combine the annexation committee into the Santa Maria Supplemental Water Committee. So that should be like Santa Maria Supplemental Water / annexation.
Okay.
Mr. Wynn and myself.
That's a standing committee.
We
should add that as a standing committee.
Yes.
Yes.
Can staff send us a copy of these regs as an attachment so we can have them at home?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll take care of that. I can send you the whole enchilada if you want.
Sure. I can chop it down.
Yeah, so that you can get the...
context. Yeah.
On the committees, going back to the committees, if you don't mind, at the top we have delegates to community committees, and under there we have parks. Now, is that incorrect? Right. So that should come down, or is that a...
No, no, that's actually a separate... That's a delegate to the parks subcommittee of the NCAC.
Okay.
And they're dealing with, like, the community park and those kinds of issues once they get back up on their feet.
But the standing committee under parks is specific to the Old Town?
Specific to the Old Town, right
okay.
here.
So we'll add some clarity there.
We had tried to do parking, but it turns out that parking is under the heading of parks. So...
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, any public comment on item number E1, election of officers? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. And Mr. Wynn, you had your hand up.
I nominate Larry Fairhiley for president.
I'll second that.
I'll be happy to accept that for one more year. Thank you. I guess we do need a vote
Well, I think you've got to ask, is there any other nominations?
That's true. Thank you, Mr. Seitz. Are there any other nominations? Are there any nominations from the floor?
No.
Okay. I'm just trying to cover all bases. Okay, then, seeing no other nominations, we'll close it for nominations of the press. Mr. Seitz, do we need a motion, second, and a vote?
I think we have a motion, we have a second on the floor.
All we have is a nomination.
Only has a nomination.
That's not the same as a motion.
All we have is a nomination.
Okay, so, let's just go through it then. We'll take the conservative route. I guess we need to have a motion and a second to appoint Mr. Verheilig as president, and then we'll take the roll call vote.
Okay.
I move that we vote on the nomination.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen, and
I'll second that.
Thank you, Mrs. Wersing. Madam Secretary.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Wersing?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
President Verheilig?
Yes. I don't know if I should vote on that. I mean, well, I guess you can, you know. George votes for himself.
Absolutely.
Okay, we then have the position of vice president, and would like to nomination.
I would like to nominate Ed Eby for vice president.
Okay. Are there any other nominations for vice president? Mr. Trotter?
I'd like to nominate Mike Nguyen for vice president.
Okay. Any other nominations? Then seeing none, we'll close the nominations. I guess, Mr. Seitz, we would take the vote for Mr. Eby first.
Yes.
Now, do we need a motion and a second?
No, I think the president has a fair amount of discretion in how he wants to handle it. The only thing that has to be clear is that the public has the right to know how the vote went. So I've seen this handled one or two ways, and maybe there's a thousand variations of this, so I'm not claiming to be it. One is that we can quickly do this, put a piece of paper in front of each board member, they can write their name on the paper and who they voted for, and then you would collect and the president would count them up and then announce who each member voted for. Of course, it takes three votes to elect the vice president. That's one way. Another way the president can do is he can say, all those in favor of Mr. Eby raise their hands, and all those in favor of Mr. Nguyen raise their hands, and then can we have a motion and a second to appoint Mr. whoever it is as the vice president. The only requirement is that it be full public disclosure on who voted for whom at when the end of the day. No secret ballots. So
it's
I leave it to the board to
let's just raise their hands.
Yeah, I think it's easier to do the hand raising, and then we'll take a motion and a second. And so all those in favor of Mr. Eby, please raise their hands. Okay. All those in favor of Mr. Nguyen, please raise their hands for vice president. Okay. Then we'll need a motion and a second for Mr. Nguyen as vice president.
I'll make that motion.
And I will second it. Madam Secretary. This is getting very confusing.
We'll catch up.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Verheilig?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Wersing?
I guess I'll have to vote yes. Since I'm.
Well, you don't have to.
I don't have to.
You don't have to, no.
You don't have to. That's your discretion.
Okay, well, I'll say no. Not that it's anything
you,
personal.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Thank you. We slipped through item E1 and attorney.
Before we leave that, there were the associated committees, which I suppose come up next month.
Yes.
Is there some procedure by which the president can talk to more than one member without violating the Brown Act? I mean, how does that work?
Well, I think that's always a danger on this, but I think, you know, the prohibition is a quorum of the board getting together on to make or form a consensus on a future board action.
Hmm.
So I don't think that the prohibition reaches to the president asking each board member if they want to serve.
Because it's not a board action.
If it got to the point where it says, do you mind serving and who would you like serving with you? And then you go to the next person, do you mind serving with Mr. Wynn or whoever is Mr. Eby or Mr. Trotter, then I think you're on the edge.
Except it's not a board action now. This is strictly his personal
right.
purview.
But typically it comes back to the board for, you know, so the announcement is made. It's still, I still think it's dangerous ground to try and develop a quorum consensus on who should be on what committees.
Okay.
So I think the president can say, do you want to be on this board? I think that on this committee, I think when you start getting to the position of and who do you want to be serving with you on the committee, and then you call up that person who wants, do you mind serving on that committee with Director so-and-so, now you have three people involved, the president and the two other people, and I think
I would rather go the phone call, which committees would you like to serve on?
Right.
And that's, just write them down, and then we hash it out here
right.
exactly. at the regular meeting. Makes it cleaner. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Seitz, for that insight. Because that always has sort of...
I always take them the most conservative approach, because sometimes it's the perception is greater than the actual action itself, and you want to make sure that you cover both bases.
Okay, then we'll move on to item number E2, which is a basin monitoring contract. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. And what we have actually attached is a draft basin management monitoring contract, and this was put together following direction from the board at our last meeting. I contacted SAIC, Mr. Bob Beebe, who has worked with this district for some time now on groundwater issues, and representing us through Mr. Markman in the groundwater adjudication. And then also Mr. Beebe has been the project manager on the urban water management plan update. So I contacted him and asked him for a scope of work and budget for beginning our basin monitoring activities, and that's what we have here forwarded on December 8th. And there's some issues I wanted to point out. I think what we have is a draft budget of $65,000. Mr. Beebe and I worked together over the phone on this. We talked that there were a number of the aspects of the scope of work that, just due to the nature of where we're at with basin monitoring and setting up the Napomo Mesa Management Authority and these types of things, or I'm sorry, the Napomo Mesa Management Area Committee, that there are some unknowns. And so that's what I've outlined here in the staff report, that this draft budget is considered a worst case, gives us a starting point, a place to a number to work under and move forward with. It's not as defined, I think, as we'd like to see sometimes, but again, given the nature of the activity we'll be undertaking, I think that's understood. Further, I've included some excerpts from the stipulation that we are working, I don't want to say under, but working toward recognizing. And the excerpts clearly indicate that the budget for annual basin monitoring is at least envisioned to be under $75,000 a year, and that there are a number of parties that are to share in funding in that effort. And those parties, it's not the complete technical group, but it is the district, Golden State Water, Rural Water, ConocoPhillips, and Woodlands Mutual Water Company. Of course, we have not sat down to negotiate who will carry what level of burden of doing the annual monitoring, but again, that's something that we are unable to do before, you know, considering this contract. But I think...
Will BB represent any other entity?
That's yet to be seen. I think BB, there's also a gentleman by the name of Steve Bachman who works for ConocoPhillips, and ConocoPhillips being...
They're on the periphery of this issue.
I think ConocoPhillips is smack in the middle because they've got some of the westernmost supply wells. So I've always looked to them to think that they have as much at stake as anyone, because if seawater intrusion occurs, it'll occur first. They'll see the first effects of it. So what I'm saying there is they have also a hydrogeologist who's been very involved with this basin for a number of years now, and they'll want his expertise at the table also.
Sure.
So, you know, Mr. Beebe wrote this scope of work up from the position that right now he's the sole person. As the stipulation says, we'll be sharing this burden with other members of the committee, and either through costs, where if we incur all the costs in contracting with Mr. Beebe, then we'll share it by cost. But I think what will happen is, and we'll be defining this on some of our initial meetings that we've outlined in the scope of work, as we sit down with ConocoPhillips, I envision some give and take, and they'll say, you know, we'll take that aspect of it, or here we've already worked up this model, we already have the wealth, you know, some sharing of the efforts, so that we'll see our costs under this contract be something less than what we've outlined here. So it'll be shared effort going forward, but I know as the largest purveyor, we should expect that we'll be shouldering, you know, our fair share of costs. I mean, I fully expect that we'll be paying more toward the annual and ongoing basin monitoring and management efforts than Cal Cities or Rural or any other single entity.
Well, it'd be based on a proportion of water pumped by each entity.
That's how I envision at this point, because the
water produced.
Right. And then the overlying landowners, they have a seat on the technical committee, but they are not a paying member.
If they have signed the stipulation.
That's right. It has to be an overlying landowner that has signed the stipulation. That is stipulated. That's right. So this gets us started.
Yeah, I think from a policy perspective, you should view this as an agreement that you would likely enter into or want to have this information produced regardless of the stipulation. Because as Michael's pointed out, there's an opportunity to be reimbursed for some of these costs, but there's no, you know, since the way this is moving forward, you know, that has to be negotiated. And of course, when you negotiate, people have different points of view. So I think the best position for this board to look at this is this something that we would do? Would we want to do basin monitoring as part of our water operation, regardless of the stipulation, with the hopes that once this committee gets formed, that we will receive contribution for the work that we've jump started here.
I hope this involves my pet peeve being groundwater contours, depth contours, and quality contours. Can you suggest that if it isn't part of the mix?
I can, and I'm certain it will be part of the mix, because one of the things that's envisioned by the basin management are these action levels. And of course, that's not going to be the level in one single well. That's going to be a contour level to say, hey, across...
Which is the most meaningful.
Which is the most meaningful, and it says something more about... But I don't want to get into... Sometimes contours overstate the knowledge. People will look at that contour and go, well, see, there, yeah, and we connect two points that are literally miles apart and say, that's the contour. You know, so sometimes they will tend to convey or can convey more information than we really have. But I feel very confident with reviewing SAIC's work for the trial and the work they put together there in the trial, and work they've done really throughout the Santa Maria groundwater basin. They work extensively for UNICAL and oil field cleanup also, and their ability then, their understanding of our groundwater basin, our sub-area, and the ability to present the data in a manner as you've outlined. It's effective.
And again, the way this would be envisioned, I think Michael and I talked about this, so, you know, we have a new form contract for engineering, and this would be a task order. So you would not be giving the general manager the authority. This isn't the agreement. This would be converted somehow into a task order as part of the overall our general engineering agreement. So I just want to make sure that this says this is a short form agreement. Actually, it's a task order under a much larger agreement. Is that right, Mike?
Right. So it may just be semantics, but we have an existing contract right. with SAIC, and then this is a task order,
right.
an addendum to that.
Right.
That lays out a specific scope of work and has
it. So it has all, the reason why I want to bring this up, it has all the insurance requirements, the indemnification requirements, the prohibitions on discrimination and all those other little bells and whistles that governmental agencies are subject to are all contained in our master agreement. And then this would be a task order under that master agreement.
Okay, well, thank you. Questions, comments, Mr. Wynn?
Yes, and I must apologize to staff. I have a number of reservations, and the more productive way is to sit down with staff ahead of time and talk them through, and I apologize that I didn't find time to do that. I would say at least 5 points. I would say no. Authorized no expenditures under this expansion in 2005.
Right.
Now, I realize that's only 3 weeks to go or whatever, but if we have a cap on how much is spent in a year, let's don't make expenditures that are exempt from next year's cap.
Okay, and this does not infer a cap on expenditure each year. I don't want to mislead. What I've included is an excerpt from the stipulation that merely says the budget of the technical group shall not exceed $75,000 per year without prior approval of the court. Now, this language, I think, as we've discussed here amongst this board, this comes out of the stipulation. That the court enforcing the stipulation, enforcing this $75,000 a year cap, is something that's in the future for us, not envisioned for 2006 for that matter.
Then let me list my four concerns. One, the NMMA is not in place.
Correct.
And therefore, we're talking about somebody administering something that doesn't even exist yet. Now, we anticipate that it will be sooner, better than later, as far as I'm concerned. But to already be choosing somebody to serve on a non-existent group, I think is the cart before the horse. I would like to see what the NMMA actually is before we say who does what. Secondly, my guess, and you correct me if I'm dead wrong, but expenditures that we made before the formation of the NMMA would not be subject to reimbursement. I mean, they could be good-hearted and reimburse us, but I can't. I don't think they have any obligation.
Right. And I would concur with that. So that, I mean, that's the first thing I posed, is that it was my understanding from the last board meeting, and that these were things that the board would want to do, regardless. So I'm saying, yeah, is counting on the MMA to reimburse us for this study is a probability. It's not an absolute. So the real question is this the type of information that the board would want, regardless of the formation or reimbursement of the MMA?
And then what that would mean is that we're actually hiring an engineering firm to do some work for us that we want done without any anticipation of being reimbursed, at least at this stage.
Okay, and then I understand that point, and
okay.
We've touched on, I'd like,
next,
to respond, but I'd like to hear the other two.
I guess I don't see why we're modifying the contract. I understand the bells and whistles are in place, but for me, it would be cleaner to finish the urban water management plan update, because we knew we went into that, it was a closed-ended contract. Finish it, the update's done, we pay them off, that contract's ended. And then have something that has no connections to that for this.
Let me see, okay, if I can explain this a little bit. If I can, Mike.
Is that okay? And one of the reasons is that then we don't sole source what may be a very long running contract.
Well, this is how we set up our engineering contracts. You might remember about 8 or 9 months ago, the district took a different tack than its traditional engineering contracting and consulting contracting. We came up with a master contract for various engineering firms, and then the way it was set up is that then the general manager of the district had the ability to issue task orders under these contracts.
Right.
So this task order approach would be a new contract.
Okay.
It just that it incorporates our master contract. So the idea here is that we shouldn't be mixing apples and oranges. We should not be mixing the urban water management plan with the task order that you're looking at. We have several engineering firms, I believe, that are working under with more than one task order presently. And so we kind of have a new approach, because now we have an engineering firm that has agreed to all the indemnification clauses. We don't have to negotiate those anymore. All of the things that are required under the government code. And now we're comfortable with these engineering firms, and now we issue them task orders under the master contract that they've already agreed to all the terms and conditions.
Don't get me wrong, I really like SAIC.
Yeah.
I can't imagine somebody being more knowledgeable on this specific issue than they are. I'm more concerned with somebody else who's in the business who says, you know, my firm would have liked to have bid on that contract, and you guys sole sourced it. That's my concern, and it may not be a valid concern at all.
I've outlined that we have a policy in place that says contracts above $25,000, and then I've outlined, in working with council, on what a policy means. And a policy is something that the board should follow unless there are special circumstances, and that's what I've tried to lay out here in the staff report. Some clarification. So, not to say that maybe another firm wouldn't have hurt feelers, but they wouldn't have legal recourse against the district for the action we're taking and the direction we're headed. And I brought out in the staff report that SAIC under the Urban Water Management Plan, we did competitively bid that contract. And what we actually did on that contract was we went, while SAIC's bid was literally twice what the other firm that bid on the contract was, we decided, based on their
their level of knowledge and understanding of the issue, which was, again, was centered around our basin and its characteristics and its ability to supply water, water resources, we went with SAIC. And it was my thought that for this project, again, being very specific to the management of our basin, that I feel like if we did step back and went through a bid process on this project, I'm having a very difficult time imagining another firm taking that from SAIC because, again, they're...
If nobody else has legal recourse, period, then I'm
right.
I'm okay.
And let me just clarify. This is really vocabulary. But you don't bid professional services. You're not obligated to go with the lowest bidder for the services.
Right.
You can consider, the, of course, the cost of the service, but what you're hiring is expertise. And that's within the discretion of the board to make a determination as to what is the best consultant to hire. And we went out of our way to make sure the board understood that we did have a policy with the $25,000, but that's all it is a policy. It's something that we should achieve, and if we're not going to do it, there should be a stated reason why we're not going to adopt that policy. And again, Michael laid that out in the staff report, the reasons why SAIC has that bag of knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
Already available, and the board in the past has expressed their, up to this point, their confidence in the work that SAIC does.
Then help me to understand, and I apologize, Mr. President, this is my last one.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wynn.
Is it your understanding then that you only come back to the board if you go above $25,000 to a specific engineering firm, or is it per task?
Per task order, and it's actually $15,000
okay.
that brings us to the board. And it's actually, if it's a non-budgeted item, it's $5,000. I can go up to $5,000 on a non-budgeted item on my signature without board approval. Above $5,000 if it's non-budget. If it's a budgeted item, I can go up to $15,000. And then above that, it comes to the board regardless of budget or not. And then if it's above $25,000, the board's policy again is then we do an open.
Well, it's a request for proposals.
Request for proposals.
RFP.
The right, use the right vocabulary.
So we could have a series of $14,000 contracts.
That's right.
That never came to the board.
That's right.
And they could go on how many of those a year?
I could do 100 of them. And then you'd say, thanks for your service, General Manager. if what you're asking, are there ways that the General Manager could really spend some money here without board oversight? Yes.
Well, obviously, if there's not trust,
then
it doesn't work.
Then we've got to.
Yeah, I understand.
Then you need someone in this position you can trust, and if you don't have that, then the directors need to act to change that, because that's right. In order to function in this position, you must have some authority.
And again, just make it clear, it's, you know, if it's budgeted, the board has already adopted
sure.
a policy to do the work. So sort of keep in mind that it's not without a general broad board policy that they wanted the work done.
Mr. Trotter, please.
We hire SAIC. Conoco hires their person. The city of Santa Maria hires their person. So who, when all this is put together and digested, who reports, who constructs the reports? Who composes the reports? And how is it financed?
First, and the city of Santa Maria is not part of our management
okay.
group. Okay, but
say.
That'll be
rural water.
Right, but that will be by committee, and I think we brought up some great points, and maybe I can try to tie them together. Is the cart before the horse? Yes, in regards to Napomo Mesa management area committee management. Yes, we're not there yet. As Mr. Seitz brought up,
is this, the way that the director should look at this today, is this work that we feel we should be taking on now?
Anyway.
Anyway, that's right. And I think the answer to that is a resounding yes.
Yeah.
This is about identifying and characterizing so that we can better understand. I can better understand from a management aspect, and the directors can better understand from a policy aspect what the health of our basin is today. I think we'd all like to have that information, I think, every time we get together. And so this is about getting after that. And as far as when the management authority sits down and begins the basin management process and then starts producing the annual reports, who will write that report, who will pay for that report, I think we're, again, that's not something I can answer today, but it'll be one report coming from a committee, and the idea there is that the committee is communicating and not, you know, sharing data and sharing information and not producing competitive reports like we had done throughout the trial process.
Okay, Mr. Eaton, you have some comments?
I have a couple of questions.
More questions?
Regarding where the wells are that they're going to be monitoring, do you foresee that that SAIC will have access to non-NCSD wells to monitor?
We'll certainly attempt to, because NCSD wells, as you know, are production wells first and monitoring wells second. Mr. Beebe and I talked extensively about identifying. I told him I'd had some contacts with the county now. There are some monitoring wells, but, you know, getting private party access and agreement, we need wells that we can disclose information on. It makes no sense for us to monitor wells then that we cannot report out publicly as to what the level in those wells is. We won't do that. So we had talked about, and the scope touches on this in particular, that this does not include adding well sites, which may be something that's needed. If we need to go out and say, we need a monitoring well in this area, and there's not a well existing that we can access and publicly report, we may be looking, and I think this comes out, we won't be doing that under this contract. I don't think we'll start putting well sites in until we have full committee action, because then we start talking about spending some money.
When you say putting well sites in, you mean drilling new wells?
That's right.
Just for monitoring? No.
Yeah, specific monitoring wells. They're much cheaper. You can do a small casing, that type of thing. But
there's wells around here that you should be able to get the good coverage.
You'd think, but we'll have to look at things. And often private wells you don't have well log for. You don't know the screened interval for. And again, you can't control whether that private well is pumping or is being pumped or not. You know, somebody might say, sure, go ahead and monitor my well. But I'm, of course, going to continue to use that to supply my home and my agricultural practice.
Okay, the other question is, these are... I hope that they're going to be looking at wells that are outside the management area also, because I think it seems to me that something down in the valley, it would be interesting to see if our wells are doing something, what their wells are doing too, since there is this flow of water across the
I think
the bluffs.
What we'll see there is that, of course, there are three management areas, the valley, the mesa, and the northern cities, and all areas are required to set up a monitoring network. And then there'll be coordination across the boundaries. So, but I think we'll
hopefully,
you know, we'll proceed that way.
My other question is as far as the funds for the contract. Is this a one-shot contract for $65,000, or is this a yearly thing, or is...
The way this is written up right now, it's a one-shot contract to get moving. He does outline what he perceives or foresees to be the yearly expenditures, but we are not authorizing that today. We're authorizing to a checkbook to get going and setting this thing up.
Okay. And the final one was this. You said something about this. The money we spent on this couldn't count towards the $75,000. I thought that that's what the in lieu fee meant, was that you could do things in lieu of contributing to this fund that will be funded up to $75,000. I don't see why we can't in the future.
That's correct. That's correct. I think you've stated it better than I.
than I did if I was contrary to that. The $75,000 is a number, a cap that the court's envisioning for the annual monitoring effort and reporting. And it does say right in there that there's in lieu work. So if we have a monitoring network set up and for instance, it's automated and we're taking well levels on a real-time basis and have them then reporting through our telemetry system, and then we can provide that data to be the body or the inputs and basis for an annual report, well, that's a heck of a value, and our inputs to the annual report, that's certainly considered in lieu of us writing the report or paying for the report to be written.
Okay. I have a few comments. First, I had sort of wanted to have this started about 3 years ago when I came on the board. Mm-hmm. Because the only way we can assess our groundwater basin is to know how it operates. This will give us a lot of that information, as well as how healthy it is. In here, they do talk about water quality also, but I couldn't remember where I saw it reading through it. If you go to page 3 of 5 on under their subtask 601, they're talking with the other stakeholders. I would assume that would include Woodlands also, even though they're not stated there. They have ConocoPhillips, Rural Water Company, Golden State Water Company. I think they should include Woodlands.
And I think it should be included also as a principally, that they should be mentioned here, I'd agree.
Although formally they're not a purveyor.
Understand, but they are, the reason I would agree
even
here,
if they're a mutual, it's still...
Well, that they are envisioned, or they are and will be a member of the Napomo Mesa Management.
Yeah.
Right. Under subtask 602, the first paragraph, land use data will be obtained from available aerial photography. Sometimes that's not all that hot or up to date. I would hope that they would either use that as a basis, but then go out and check it to make sure it represents today's conditions. Mm-hmm. The other thing is to use the assessor's maps. You know, if you have an empty parcel and you put a home on it, obviously that's reassessed, so the assessor's parcel number would reflect that it's a single-family residence on it now,
right,
instead of a blank piece of property or something.
If I may, Mr. Beebe and I spoke about this specifically, and the way they use the aerial data is more related to agricultural land use practices, and what they use is an infrared photography to show the amount of irrigated crop mm-hmm. that is in the management area.
Right.
And
right.
What we talked about is that he said the city of Santa Maria uses this extensively, and when they fly the area up to Black Lake Canyon, okay, on the Mesa. And what we'll be doing is talking with the city and see what they're scheduling. He says typically this flyover is made in the spring when the crops are being planted and very active. And he said we'll work with the city of Santa Maria then to say, okay, we want to pitch into that contract, and we need it to go a little bit further north, cover the entire management area, mm-hmm. and so piggyback on their efforts in the city.
Okay.
But that's
excellent.
Then on page 4 of 5, I was just thinking, are they planning on holding any workshops once they have the draft out, so to speak, or during the whole process, are they planning on holding workshops?
Public workshops?
Well, public or just with the stakeholders.
Well, the stakeholder meetings we cover. So we envision a number of meetings with stakeholders to make sure we've got that going. Public workshops, I don't think we addressed here specifically.
Okay. And does the price include travel, lodging, and meals?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that billed separately?
It says in the contract.
It typically does not.
It's...
Yeah, their attachment says lodging, meals, mileage, and other out-of-pocket expenses will be billed at SAIC cost.
Yeah.
That's on the bottom of the fee schedule.
Exactly.
Yeah, true, but, you know...
Oh, right, but does that mean, does that mean it's outside the budget?
Yeah, I thought that maybe they had sort of folded it into the 65K.
I can check on that and be back, because again, what I'm asking for today is the director's approval of the draft budget conditioned on the final the final budget being substantially similar in regard to scope and budget mm-hmm. as to this draft. And what I can do is verify and confirm that meals and lodging are under that budget.
Okay. Yeah, that's, yeah, I'm certainly in support of this, because the only way we're going to understand our water supply is to find out how it works. And I think this will go a long ways towards achieving that. So, any public comment on this item? And seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. A motion to approve the draft scope such that any amendments are substantially in compliance with what we have before us.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Trotter. And second by...
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Eby. So, Madam Secretary.
Director Trotter.
Yes.
Director Eby.
Yes.
Director Worsley.
Yes.
Director Brandt.
Yes.
President Fernheiser.
Yes. Thank you.
Just a comment in closure, if I may?
Yeah, and Mrs. Worsing has a question also.
So how did they achieve this with, you know, the same, you know, with these levels? How did this company achieve this?
That is a graph of the change in level in a number of wells throughout our basin over a whatever period of time is exhibited there. Mm-hmm. So that's the current database. That's what's one of the first tasks under this scope of work is to update that database, bring it up to 2005, evaluate the well points to make sure that they are...
that's based on
where being
depth of water,
that's,
measurements.
That, if I'm not mistaken, it is based on depth of water measurements, but what they show, what the graphic is showing, is the change in the level over a period of time. It could be an instantaneous
level. Yeah, I think it's a snapshot in time.
But that's information that again, you can't tell. There are lines being drawn between points there, and then assumptions made across those between those points, and so.
When I first saw that, I misunderstood it. I thought that had to do with the red parts mean it's drawn down deep and the blue parts mean the water's up high. And I didn't know that it was a delta measurement, which really changes the whole picture.
I believe that's what it is.
It is.
It's the first derivative.
But it's counterintuitive when the way they've drawn it, especially the one that you look from the side, mm-hmm. you think you're looking at where the water's being drawn. Instead of the rate of change.
Right, because then you see those two depressions right there, and you know, given so that's an expression of two points in time and the difference between water levels in a number of wells at those two points in time.
But it could be from here to here, or it could be from here to here.
I mean, right.
It would show the same color.
Right. It's saying you've got a 3-foot difference. It doesn't say or a 30-foot difference. It doesn't say that 30-foot difference is between 30 foot above sea level and mean sea level, or between 130 feet and 100. But it just was attempting to express to the court where those were used that we had a number of areas where we've seen a negative change in the water level over the years.
Junior, I just want to make a suggestion.
Phoebe will be here from time to time. You should keep that in your binder. She's probably here at one. We could get a more thorough explanation of what was behind that. And Mr. Wynn?
The comments I wanted to make in closure was I really like Mr. Eby's suggestion about a monitoring site in the Santa Maria Valley. I understand that others will be doing monitoring there, but we own a well site down in the bottom. And so for relatively low cost, we could put in a monitoring well there, and it would at least give us one area in which we could compare with the other data that were given by those who maybe do a larger job. I think there's some benefit to us in that. And if you look at it and say there's not, I have no problem being told that. The other thing, I have a question. The NMMA meetings, which obviously hasn't even been formed, is it your understanding that those will be open to the public and public noticed?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what it says. I believe it's covered right here. Stipulation.
Yeah,
they'll be public.
Around that.
Yeah.
Okay.
As nearly as possible. There's some language like that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then we'll go to the manager's report.
Right.
Mr. LeBrun, again, you've provided us with a very nice...
Is this going to be for the 30th or for today? The date on here is the 30th.
Well, we're gonna go back to November 30th real quick. But I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
My cut-and-paste activity gets beyond me some days. So this will be for today. And... covering a period of November 23rd, 2005, at least I got that updated right, through December 9th. First, I want to say at our next meeting in January, I will have an updated rain and allocation data, and we will consider some changes to our allocation system in a January meeting. This is something I've been dragging along here for the entire fall, and I am going to take some time here during the holidays to get to these items. I will say, as I've outlined in the staff report, as far as service requests coming into the district, it's been a very slow trickle, and we have not allocated anything during the period, neither administratively, where I believe the directors understand I have the ability to allocate water, for four-lot subdivisions and less, and a small commercial, and there's been nothing on that front. We did interviews yesterday for the conservation compliance position, and it was very good. We had at least one very strong candidate, we felt, and some good interviews. We have some more interviews to complete next Tuesday, and I'm going to try to get at least an initial response out to the candidates before the new year. I hate to leave people wondering over Christmas, but we're telling them you may not hear from us until after the new year, but I think we're certainly on track to be able to appoint. If we end up with a successful candidate, we will have a second round of interviews for any candidate or candidates that get by the first round and we feel are worthy of bringing back a possible appointment. We'll have a second, more intensive second round, and then look to appoint sometime after, obviously, February 1st, as we discussed on an earlier item. Again, the interviews went well yesterday. We had a little 30-minute pretest, and then a 45-minute pretest, which was very telling. We had the candidates get on the computer. We gave some data and a couple different assignments, and then had our interview panel. And actually, we had Bruce Buell came and assisted the district on that yesterday. So that was a three-person panel with one outsider, if you will. And it was good. I'm very hopeful. The limited-term project manager, I actually included this on the closed session again today, so that we'd have an opportunity, hopefully, to have a full board discussion. You may recall that last time there's at least one director who wasn't aware of the person we're looking at. I have since spoke with that director on a one-on-one, but I thought it would be an opportunity again to express, have a discussion with the whole board, and we've got that in closed session. Our urban water management plan public draft is now available, as you all know. You received yours. We put out a broad email announcement.
The file, electronic file size is 20 megabytes, so that really went beyond what I think many people can download. But we have our student intern working today on splitting that between the body document and the appendices. And we may be able to post it up. But in the meantime, I think we've received about 10 or more requests for disk copies. And we'll be getting those out to folks straight away. And we have provided hard copies, or will be providing hard copies to local community groups, including the president of Save the Mesa and the president, I believe is her title, of the NCAC. So we'll provide both those groups with a hard copy. We'll have a library copy here available. And I've put on our email notice also that if our circulation of the document isn't working for somebody, if they don't have email, if they don't have, well, I put on an email announcement, so I'm not going to get it, but we want folks' comments. So I want to hear from people if they say, well, none of that works for me. What I need is a hard copy delivered to my house at between 10 and 12 on Friday. We'll do our best to facilitate any requests and to get inputs.
With pizza.
With pizza.
With pizza, we'll do our best.
Pepperoni and sausage.
A few other points there, I'll leave. If we have questions, I'd be happy to. I will be meeting, of course, George is here in our audience today, our Black Lake liaison, and tomorrow we have a meeting scheduled for here in the district conference room with members of the Black Lake community on our ongoing SALTS violations there. I didn't hear as of yesterday, but I expect the abandonment of our Hermerick well is complete. I was out on site on Monday with Jim Garing. We visited both that site and the Black Lake Lagoon, which is also what I typify as 99% complete. Jim had a few questions on some of the billing he wanted to clear up before we, on the Black Lake Lagoon, that is, liner, before we issue a that's our notice of completion, as we do at the end of a project like that. So that's, I think, some good progress. Jumping down to solid waste, we saw the county out sweeping streets again today. It's interesting, I think, as a follow-up from Director Wiersing's comments. I merely called the county to discuss street sweeping and how we could coordinate and maybe direct some of our solid waste franchise fees toward the effort. And it seems like they took that as get out here and sweep the streets, and they're out here sweeping the streets. But I have made contact with Dale Ramey at the county. He's assisting on our, the effort to get the trash cans in place, and will also carry forward with the county the idea of maybe somehow us directing some fees, or somehow if they can operate the thing on their budgets and get that street sweeper out here regularly, then we won't send money that way. But if we can assist, whatever's needed. We have received about 10 letters or maybe more on the mandatory solid waste issue. You've seen some of my responses. I've got 4 or 5 letters on my desk now that I need to respond to, and I'll continue to copy directors with my responses, so you're aware, but I'm pretty much staying along the same lines. I have explained to folks that while when they're in Mexico for the 3 months in their vacation home and not here, they're still paying the vacation rate of what equates to $12 a month. The benefit they're receiving is that the rate that the entire community felt, we minimized our increase by instituting mandatory. So all members of our community did receive some benefit there. Additionally, and by direction of the Board of Directors, I have contacted the county solid waste coordinator, that's Mary Whittlesey, and said, here's our policy, we've adopted mandatory, where's the county at? And she has committed to me that she will meet with Supervisor Cacho Asajian and begin the process of moving toward mandatory in the county. So, I don't expect a motion by the county next month, or maybe even halfway through next year, but maybe toward the end, something like that. Finally, I just wanted to add
add to my recommendation, if you will. A couple notes. The office will be closed again the week of the 26th of December. Additionally, I will be taking the 21st, 23rd of December off. During that week, the office is closed. I will be on email and hold some office hours. So if there are, any of the directors would like to come by or make an appointment, it'll be a good quiet week for me as far as a working week, but quiet and relaxed. I'd welcome your contacts. And finally, then I'd like to just thank the board for the support through the year for myself and all staff. And let's say enjoy your holidays and take time with your family. Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Carter.
I have a question. Under vehicle,
yes.
You mentioned that you eliminated the $300 per month of car allowance, but in addition to that, there was an adjustment on your vacation.
Well,
is that right?
That's correct, and there was actually a raise also. The contract amendments, I just touched on the contract amendment that was relative to the vehicle here.
Okay.
I didn't want to misconstrue that as saying that was the only contract amendment.
It might have been another line out of there.
No, what we did, from my recollection, is we had a 300-month car allowance. We purchased a car for the staff, and so we deleted the $300 a month car allowance from the contract.
That's
so
true.
It was a the purchase of an automobile by the district, which I think you approved two meetings ago.
Right, so I was just following up on the completion of that, and then again, at my annual review in September, the board did generously provide an additional week of vacation leave and a 5% salary increase. But those have been covered in previous meetings.
Okay.
Notes.
Mr. Eby?
Do you have any update on the Holloway annexation?
Holloway annexation, I don't. I've had a few contacts with the Holloway's agent, which is Jesse Hill, and seems to maybe a bit of confusion there, but I try to clarify. He said their map had changed slightly, and thus they'd be reapplying. And I said, I believe your application is probably fine unless the number of home sites or something, unless there's been a substantial change from really a water or wastewater resources issue. I said, where we remain with the Holloway annexation is a signed annexation agreement or an agreed upon annexation agreement that then I can bring in front of the board to approve for signature with Holloway's.
And, but you, from your perspective, their application is in and they have a draft annexation agreement that they need to agree to.
That's correct.
And they haven't done that yet.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where it is. It's the action is on them to agree to the annexation agreement.
To say, that's right, because I don't want to bring the annexation agreement in front of the board and have the applicant stand there saying it doesn't work for us. So we need their head nod. And
okay,
so
the action is, the ball's in their court.
That's right. Sure. And yeah. Interestingly enough, yeah. On annexations, we have not heard from the Craig Lucia Mar group, who after the Board of Supervisors action, which said you shall annex, to move forward, you shall annex to the district and receive water service and supplemental water from the district. Mm. One of their agents was saying on the way out the door to me was, you'll see us next week or some such thing.
Well, that's two different applicants.
I understand,
yeah.
But I would expect the Craig development application, I would have expected that, as I was told at that meeting, that being within the week, they haven't been in yet.
Yeah.
Just so you know, have not seen an application.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. LeBrun. With that, then, committee reports. Mr. Trotter, committee reports. Ms. Worsing. Amy, Mr. Wynn. Okay. Director comments, then we'll start with Mr. Wynn.
Okay.
Make it short.
First, I want to commend the staff for their work on the urban water management plan update that was circulated, that is being widely circulated for comment. I particularly like the way you did it. It must be obvious to everybody that gets your notice that we are courting comment very earnestly, and I think that's healthy. I would urge you to send notification to the Napomo Farm Bureau and the Napomo Valley Mutual Water Company, giving them the details of the sealing of the Hermrick well, since they have a vested interest in the area and they need to be reassured that that's not going to somehow lower the water table in their area.
Napomo Valley Mutual Water Company and the Farm Bureau. And
Napomo Farm Bureau.
Napomo Farm
Bureau. There's a branch here.
Okay.
Michael Moore is, yeah.
Okay, and the suggestion there is an update on the Hermrick well, and
yeah,
obviously also
just make
urban
sure the
water management plan, make sure they know
yeah
what that
you mentioned that they're putting in the trash receptacles here in the old town, which is a good thing, but I hope that they'll go ahead and put them in the West Teft corridor as well.
Check.
I'm not sure they understand. They're getting a lot of pressure in the old town from Kathy Kubiak and others, ourselves included. But this is not supposed to be a sweetheart deal just for one area of Napomo. It's supposed to cover the entire commercial corridor. There is a letter going from the RAC to the Board of Supervisors this coming Tuesday. The RAC voted unanimously to support a level 3 severity for the RMS, and they are asking again that a level 3 be certified by the supervisors with the sole proviso that when the mitigations are in place that they authorized staff to do last May, that then it would be lowered to level 2. And I have to say that initially, I was suggesting an interim 2. Mr. Eby pointed out very well at the advisory council that there really is no such classification as an interim this or that. We just need to say level 3 and then go to level 2 when those are in place. So that level, that letter is going out this week. The RAC will be meeting on Wednesday, the 4th of January. Because New Year's falls right on Christmas, we really jump into the new year without the customary week off. And a number of things will be brought up there. The earworm will be discussed, and there may be some specific instruction about Las Osas CSD being deleted from the, or whatever. I don't know. I know that that's being raised constantly. The Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Study Group will start meeting also on that same Wednesday in Templeton at the CSD. That doesn't really impact us here, except it does set a precedent for having a RAC study group that deals with an aquifer, and at some point that may be something we want to ask for down here. And there will be election of this coming year's officers for the RAC. RAC, WRAC, Water Resources Advisory Committee. The housing element is being updated before the Board of Supervisors, and one of the changes that I anticipate is unleashing a lot more multifamily residence permits in our area. Now, we have permitting that could continue, but that they have run out of allocation numbers at the planning department. It's not our doing. It's their own doing. But I think that's going to be changed, and we should keep an eye on it. And last, there are two Christmas parties that our entire board has been encouraged to attend, or certainly invited sincerely. First is the LAFCO party, which is tomorrow, from 12 to 2 in San Luis Obispo with their offices. And the second is the Board of Supervisors on Friday from 3:30 to 5 in the supervisor's own area. And
go ahead. I was going to say, I saw something in the paper today that looked like they were inviting the county to the...
Actually, they pursuant to the Brown Act, because all five of them will be there, they did that. So it went out five times over television yesterday, and we'll see who shows up or doesn't. But, and that's it.
Okay, Mr. Ely, director comments?
I checked the agenda for the Board of Supervisors next Tuesday, and the Level 3 issues, or the RMS report is on there. Staff report consists of one page, where they don't mention any recommendations for levels. They said accept the report. They don't mention the fact that the NCAC wrote them a letter saying it should be Level 3. They don't mention that the RAC said anything about Level 3. It's just a, here's our report, accept it. So I think that we need some presence at that meeting. I'm going to go as a private citizen and just ask that they accept the facts, certify a Level 3, just like they would certify an audit. I mean, an audit, you don't make a political decision on whether you accept an audit or not, and this is, to me, a technical audit. And I'm going to mention that to them and say that they ought to certify a Level 3 per their own guidelines.
Did they include our letter?
Not in the staff report that's online. Usually the staff report that's online is very thorough, and it mentions what different groups commented on it. There's no mention in there that the RAC commented on it. There's no mention that the NCAC commented on it. Now, there might be letters that's attached to the package that they receive, but it's not in the staff report that's online.
You post that whole packet.
They usually post the whole thing.
It's like one or two pages. I looked at it last night.
And the district representatives will be speaking here?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I have that on the calendar. Just as an aside or related, John Hand, of course, the county senior planner, I think is his title, or county planner, this will be his last report to the board. He is retiring as of December 30th, I believe was the date he mentioned. And I don't know, after the RAC meeting, I really said, come on, it's your last chance to worry, because our position was, from the staff level, you have to recommend Level 3. That's what the data says. And then have the Board of Supervisors make the difficult political decision if they're going to say, oh no, it's like they did last year, it's not a 3, it's a 2, we can tell from here, you know. Maybe he's not going out with a bang.
Yeah, I don't think so. They probably threatened they would reduce his retirement or something. Mr. Eby? Okay. Mrs. Worsing, director comments. Mr. Trotter? Okay, I have a couple. Tomorrow, Mr. Wynn and I will be meeting with CACHO planning members of the NCAC regarding residential multifamily, and then we'll also be meeting on December 29th on TDCs. Tomorrow's meeting is up in SLO at 2:30, right after the LAFCO open house. The 29th meeting will be at 10 a.m. here at NCSD, and I will open for that to discuss transfer development credits.
How does that come under the jurisdiction of the NCSD?
Anything that is development related impacts the water basin.
Hmm. And it's in our policy that TDCs, among other densifications, are discretionary.
So we'll be looking at these items. And that's really all I had. Wish everybody happy holidays. So with that, Mr. Seitz.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. We do have five items on closed session. Four of them under litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9. This is the Santa Maria groundwater adjudication. The other one is Maria Vista versus the NCSD. The other one is Summit Station. This is the district's challenge. And the other one is this latest lawsuit, Citizens Against Unlawful Fees versus the Napomo Community Service District, challenging our capacity charges. Then there's the public employee appointment. That is assistant to the manager, and that's pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Seitz. Then at this time, we'd like to open it to public comment for any items on closed session before adjourning to closed session. Seeing none, then we'll bring it back, and we will now adjourn to closed session. And we'll also take a...
The Board of Directors did adjourn to closed session to discuss those items posted on the agenda, specifically those four items under pursuant to litigation, that's Government Code Section 54956.9. In each instance, the Board did hear an update from its legal counsel, but took no reportable action. As to number five, they did discuss the appointment of an assistant to manager position pursuant to Government Code Section 54957, but took no reportable action.
Thank you. With that, meeting adjourned.
Let the good times roll.
Let's go enjoy some